Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Greetings, this is Hercules Invictus. Welcome to the Voice of Olympus e-radio show on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Athena's off adventuring and she might be joining us a little later on. Tonight, we have author and artist Alden Morris, who has done a lot of interesting things that I think should be shared. Welcome, Alden, to the Voice of Olympus.
Thank you very much.
Now, I first became aware of you on Facebook through your articles on health, and then I took an exceptional interest in you when you did your astrological series, also on YouTube and in also Natural News. But your voice extends much further than that. So I'd like for us to take a stroll through your exciting journey as an artist and author.
Oh, sounds good to me. Well, let's first start with some of the first research that I did, because I think that's pretty much where I can best explain how I got started to where I am now.
Okay.
I'm Greek, so family speaking, I've grown up, you know, celebrating my Greek at pride and celebrating my Nordic roots on my mother's side and the Greek roots on my father's side. And so I've always understood who I am. It wasn't until I got older that I started understanding the importance of who I come from. So when you look into, you know, genealogical research and, you know, countries here and there and, you know, the impact that they've made on not just the world but civilizations and cultures, it's flattering to know that Greek culture is still predominantly strong in Western culture today. So I took that as a sign that you know, obviously I have a lot more research to do and I have a lot to live up to if I want to make, you know, my family proud, my ancestors proud. At the same time, I was also questioning my own ideological beliefs. I presumed I was Catholic. I was born into a Roman Catholic family and, you know, I had my questions and my feelings and things. Once I got older and I understood that there are other options out there that don't completely constrict, you know, your beliefs and your intelligence and, you know, have those specific guidelines about reaching out because of blasphemy, things like that. And it's okay to learn as much as you can. That's when I realized that ancient Greek philosophers and all the way up till today had almost virtually a religion that was based on intelligence or enlightenment. And that's when I realized that, hey, that connects to the founding of our nation here in America. So it all just started connecting and clicking for me, so I just kept researching and researching. I fully adopted my ancestral gods, my ancestral beliefs. The only downfall about that was that there's not too many people who have done that, and there's not too many people in my area who have done that for their Greek culture. So, one thing that I've respected and highly have been grateful for was the fact that a lot of Germanic families in my area have taken the same transition into accepting their ancestral worship and their ancestral gods, and they said, and communicate and build with others on those types of things. So, although they, you know, they're not meeting up and worshiping Zeus and, you know, Aphrodite and Apollo, they're meeting up and they're worshiping Thor and Odin and Frey. So, yeah, different names, same, you know, same emotions, same incentives. So, got to meet those people, and, you know, I do have roots on the Germanic side with my mother's side of the family, so it was, you know, comfortable to be in and learn and share and adopt and adapt as well. So that's pretty much what I've been doing with religious. Ever increasing my research, which is definitely a religion in terms of research.
Our connection's kind of breaking apart.
Let me adjust where I'm at real quick.
Okay, are you on a cell phone?
If, yes, I am.
Because that happens to me when I talk to people on the cell phone. We always lose each other, and it's a repositioning contest until we find each other again.
Yeah, there seems to be there's snow over here in Washington today, which is a rare thing, so that does have an impact on our cell phone reception. Let me step outside where I can actually enjoy the snow. How's that? Is that a little better?
That's a lot better. Thank you. We share much in common there. I'm Greek also. I've explored many other cultures, and I've kind of been playing hide and seek with my ancestral gods and finding them in these different pantheons. And my longest walks were in the Celto-Norse areas, you know, northeastern Europe. And my wife, mm-hmm. Athena, her background is Celto-Nordic, and she spent a lot of time with the Greek spirituality. So between us, we have pretty much the same mix of heritages and ideas as you also found a lot of meaning in.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because one of the things that I realized when I was doing my research and, you know, adopting my own ancestral gods is, you know, it comes with a feeling of loneliness, too, because even if you have Greek people around you, they may have not accepted their old ancestral ways. And if you go to Greece now, you're almost thought of as silly for believing in the old gods. And when you think about it, why is it that way? It's the church. It's the Catholic Church in Greece, the Greek Orthodox Church. They're so powerful. In fact, even Greece doesn't have freedom of religion, unlike America. And they are founding democracies. Like, they, you know, they gave us the world we know. So it comes right back to Christianity, control, power, politics. And so if you find me online, you'll see that I'm very, very politically involved and very politically opinionated. And that, again, stems from my Greek roots and my Greek beliefs. Our people were very adamant about their freedom. So that's what I love
very
about
true.
Nordic culture. Yeah, Nordic culture, they love to express themselves. So they'll be damned if they have someone tell them they can't believe in something. So they kind of set the marker when it comes to fighting for your beliefs, as we set the marker for fighting for your rights. So I definitely have adopted both virtues and like to apply them to both fields to help anybody who comes along to see the same thing if they find themselves that way.
That is awesome that you're doing that. We're involved in a lot of interfaith efforts people are killing each other and demonizing each other over differences of opinion as to why we're here and what this is all about. That's very tragic because the spiritual journey is one that should liberate you from such concerns. But alas, it does not, not on this planet anyway. So we've been doing a lot of work with universalist and synchronistic type of belief systems like theosophy and ascensionism that pretty much they grew out of the Greco-Egyptian and Babylonian era of the Hellenistic age. And then underground and became different magical systems until Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and others brought them back out of the underground again with the Theosophical Society. Which extended the circle beyond the Hellenistic age into the Orient and into India. So they arose after the darkness that came from the Phoenicians not moving around doing commerce, everyone had their rites and rituals and myths and so forth. And during the age of Alexander, horrific as that was in many ways with all the conquest and killing, people were able to communicate again because there was a political unity. And they discovered that even though the details of their myths might be a little bit different, a lot of their esoteric information was near identical. So they concluded then that there was an exoteric side to religion, which is the regional cultural, and it contained truths, but they were hidden behind allegories and parables. And then there was the esoteric information, which was similar everywhere, and that contained the reality of what was behind the religion, and it was kind of universal. And that started to that awareness started to spread until, of course, again, there was repression and all sorts of things going on, and then it went underground. So we're working to try to get this communication system up and running again so that people can believe whatever they want. They should have the freedom to pursue the universal in their own way, but there's a system in place for communicating and exchanging ideas without the exclusivism that sometimes happens.
Well, and it's still, like I mentioned before, we're a country, the United States here, with a value of freedom of religion, but it's not always the case. We can tell you that you're free to believe in whatever you want, but if you want to pursue, like me and you, for example, these beliefs and expand upon them, share them, well, you need help from your country. You need, churches, for example, have tax write-offs. There's so many benefits that, when you're an organized establishment that you can, help share with the people, and your government appreciates that and lends you help and gives you, these breaks to allow you to be able to do those kinds of things. But, when it comes to, beliefs that are, ancient, thousands and thousands of years old, they don't recognize that as something that, they would like to help you with to spread upon people in your country. And a part of that is, I think that the people who are in power are a lot smarter than we give them credit for, and they know that when, the general population branches out and they take on a faith that is based upon enlightenment, that they'll become too smart and you cannot control them anymore.
That's a very astute observation.
Well, my example comes from Rome in 333 AD with the Council of Nicaea, when they finally decided to go ahead and adopt Christianity as the primary religion. And it took hundreds and hundreds of years for that to finally happen. In fact, anybody who claimed Christian was often, assumed a slave because it was a slave's religion. And, they were either put to death, fed to the lions, basically back then you were, to worship the goddess Hygieia was to take a bath to prevent illness.
Yes.
And if you became Christian, you didn't believe in that anymore. So you were to be dirty and to spread disease because that was your God. So it was a societal defect. If you look at what happened after the adoption of Christianity globally, the plague came right after. Everyone started fighting. It took a couple hundred years for some of the Arabian philosophers to go down into Asia Minor and to collect some of the ancient Greek texts. And so, what Asclepius wrote, for example, on how to properly treat yourself with medicine, and the shift, again, with Western culture, so that way we can re-enlighten ourselves. We have, the Arabians to thank for that.
the Greek pantheon, however, and a lot of Greek beliefs survived throughout those dark times through art, ironically. And for a lot of people, it was the only way they can see nude art because of these classical stories. So whereas there was a lot of repression, the mythological pantheon was pagan and ancient. So they often depicted them in nude or semi-nude manners. And it's a very strange way for ideas to survive, but that happened to be true for a good long time. A lot of people now, when I tell them that my spirituality is mythical, and you said that in Greece it's considered silly by a lot of people, it's because a lot of people think of the ancient religions as they view religion now. And it was a very different thing in antiquity.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, and when I've talked to, so for example, a lot of my dad's side of the family is Greek, and they're very Greek Orthodox and very upper class, very well researched, very well off. All of them were highly educated, and they understand my beliefs, but they look at, and I'm not offended by it, but I can tell they look at it as like a form of baby steps, like religion is like it evolves. For example, like, you know, paganism was the baby version of religion, and now Christianity is supposed to be the adult version. In reality, it's the exact opposite. If you actually come out of your ideological monotheistic beliefs and accept the polytheistic beliefs, you actually literally open yourself up to so many new things that you're a more open person. If your ideological beliefs allow you to open and read into other topics, that you as a person are more accepting.
Did you go to Greek parochial school or Catholic school when you were young?
No. My grandmother saved me from those. She actually told me that I won't go to those because,
I went to one, and it was a mixed blessing. You know, there was the repression and so forth, but they also gave me a very thorough grounding in Greek mythology, the philosophers, ancient pagan religion, got a smattering of speaking ancient Greek and Byzantine Greek and all of this stuff. So even though the heaven had changed, everything else kind of remained the same. And I went to Greece many times as a child, and my people come from Lemnos, which is the island of the Amazons and Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And back then it was very medieval, so a lot of the folk beliefs still survive. They didn't have the pagan connotations, but a lot of the practices that existed in antiquity were still being enacted in these remote villages. So in a way, the Greek Orthodox education gave me all of this stuff. And later on, the repressive aspects came in because I read the Bible and I had questions, and I was told after asking my questions that that I can't read the Bible anymore because it's leading me to apostasy and heresy. And I was even forbidden to go to religion class because I was asking these questions. But I was sincerely curious at first, and then later on it became, of course, you know, I was nearing my teen years, defiant. That's a gift I got from the Greek parochial school. I don't think anything else could have given me as well-rounded an education in matters ancient as the Greek parochial school did. And I lucked out in my family in that their opinion has been that I've been interested in Olympus since childhood, so I'm going to Olympus. But because we're Greek, we have special rules. You know, there's a special paradise for pagans, like with the Catholics. And also, because we're Greek, we could visit each other in whatever heaven we happen to be in. So, yeah, I guess that's a special rule that applies to Greeks. But they had that belief. And my family's actually embraced a lot of different religions. Although the core of my family is Greek Orthodox, my sister's also married outside the faith. So there's a lot of different faiths represented. And as long as we're all family and as long as we're all Greek or married to a Greek, then it's okay. I lucked out that way.
Well, and I guess one of the things that really opened up my eyes, especially when I was younger, is in my family, we're no strangers to death. We have a lot of death that occurs in my family. I don't know if it's because we have such a big family or just a very unique and unorthodox type family, but here's just a, you know, quick tidbit is 2001, my grandfather died. I was raised by my grandmother. And 2014, my mother died, and just this past November, my grandmother passed away. My yaya passed away in 2012. My grandpa Morris on my father's side passed away on 2013. So just so on and so forth. So, and you know, not to mention, you know, the uncles and the aunts and the cousins, and you know, so our family's definitely no stranger to death. And so when these events occur, we have family gatherings, and you get a chance to really get to know some of the people that you don't get to see every day in your family. And I'm a person who, I think it was something that my grandmother taught me, but I've always been told and I've always figured that there's more than two sides to a story, two sides to a topic. There's always a third perspective. And so, for example, like if there's an argument, you know, she said, well, they both could be wrong. One of them could be right. It's the people who see the other perspective that can tell you who's wrong or right. And it's the same thing in court. That's why we have juries. Again, that comes from Greek democracy. Greek culture. So when I talk to family members who are predominantly Christian about death, still have a lot of anxiety and fear when it comes to death. As if death is still a mystery and unanswered. And I've actually been to members who claim Christianity and go to church every Sunday, Catholicism, whatnot, that they are afraid to die. And I've always thought that peculiar because I've always been curious to what happens when we die, and I've always known that it's okay when that time comes because of how many family members have already made that transition and shown us that, you know, it can be done. Everyone's going to go through it, like puberty. I've in a sense, lost my fear of death because of my ideological beliefs, and I think that's where I had come up with the maturity difference in religious aspects, because Christianity was built on the remains of paganism. They use all of our temples, all of our altars, all of our holidays, Christmas, for example, Easter, for example. Where does a bunny come from in Christianity, you know? Where does the egg come from in Christianity? They have to make up these silly stories for you to understand why they have these symbolic relations. But if you really delve into it, they stem right back to paganism, and paganism taught us that when we die, it's just the next chapter. It's no different than going to sleep at night and waking up for the next day. So I think that was the biggest thing for me, why I had to leave the monotheistic belief, was to see everyone so afraid of something that we're all going to go through. Nevertheless,
that's very true. We're all going to die. That's one of the certainties. If you're born, you're going to die. And it is part of our reality, and a lot of people are afraid and anxious about it.
Well, and if it's unanswered, if you don't have the answer for what happens after you die, or you don't have a complete answer, or you don't have comfort and security and stability and, you know, a sense of safeness, then all past questions will start to get concerned. They'll start to branch out. Heaven is not a good answer to me. It just doesn't. It's how boring. I don't know if you're aware of Stephen Fry.
No.
He's a British comedian. He's been around for quite some time, but he went down to the Utah Mormon temple and kicked off the property because they said, when you die, you get to spend all the time with your family in heaven. And he said, well, what if you don't want to be? So they asked him to leave the property and never, because he was questioning their beliefs. But he made a good point. He said, there's members of your family that, you know, you can't stand. There's people in the world that you just can't stand. Why would you want to be stuck with them in heaven? You know, like, there's this, to have an idea that you're going to go to one spot forever and that's it, doesn't sit well with a lot of children even. They're still curious to what happens after. And if you look at, you know, if you're Nordic or if you're Greek, you have Valhalla, you have the Elysian Fields, you have all these different levels of consciousness that they explain to you. And it's a journey through our, out of our body. It's a spiritual journey, and somehow our ancient ancestors knew this, and that's the beauty of it. And we're just in the middle of this journey, and there's another chapter after this.
It's true, too. A lot of people don't realize the depth. I'm spending an entire year teaching the realm of dreams in the Greek mythological and philosophical traditions, and I'm spending another year about the journey through the classical planets. And rich tradition full of lots of material. But because most people's exposure is through the mythology, they tend to dismiss it as children's stories or fairy tales. But it is a very rich tradition.
Well, what I really appreciate about when I checked out your website and looked into your show and everything is mythology is just the Greek word for history. So if anything, when you study mythology, you're studying history. So we have to remind ourselves that these stories aren't myths. They are history. Myths are, it's a Greek word for history that the English word has bastardized to make us believe it's something silly. So we have to almost reteach ourselves through our own language what of something when we hear that word. And that's another thing for change the world ideological beliefs over, they put a lot of different meanings on the same word. So
that's very true. Last week I was talking to Dr. Michael Heiser, who's a biblical scholar, and we were talking about this, like the Greek word daemonas meant an intermediary spirit with no good or bad attached to it. And an angelos was simply an intermediary spirit that delivered messages, you know, and that became angel and then demon. And so if you're listening to ancients talk about those things, they're not talking about the same thing that we mean today. The same way noble and gentle, if you read medieval texts, noble and gentle people could hack away at peasants without a problem because it was tied into nobility and the gentry. It doesn't mean the same thing today. So these words take on different meanings. And when we're looking at the past, that's something else we need to keep in mind as well.
Well, and I've had debates with Christians that say that, you know, part of the reason why paganism ended was because there were so much slaves. And, you know, they're right. The pagans were not perfect. There was a caste system, and if you think about it, every religion, every culture has a caste system, so it's not a religious problem. It's a human problem. We have a tendency, just as humans, regardless of what we believe in, to assume that we're better than someone else because we can do something or fit into something else. So we naturally create these caste systems regardless of our spirit, of our cultural identity. So when he brought that up, it was a really good point in the debate, and I had to, you know, go home and really think about that and do more research. But I'm glad that, you know, I can talk with people, and like I said earlier, I love to listen to people's ideas and opinions regardless of where they come from, because it teaches me more and it challenges me more, and that's what my religion is, enlightenment. I got to go home and study so I can talk to you tomorrow.
That's a very good way of looking at it, too, because when I teach, and I teach a great deal, I always preface or end my talks or my classes with, I've been interested in this stuff my entire life. I'm almost 60. So I've been, for like half a century, I've been wandering around collecting facts and thinking about them and comparing them and talking to people and so forth. What I'm sharing with them is my best understanding. But somebody in the room might say something to change my mind, or something might happen tomorrow that gives me a totally new perspective, in which case I'm going to change what I'm saying. So I never ask anybody to believe, you know, what I'm telling them. It's good information. You know, I've spent a lifetime thinking about this stuff and researching it, but that's just it. It's just my opinions at this particular point in time based on what I understand and what I currently see, you know, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. And that's what brought me to how I am today, because I started naturally questioning my beliefs at a young age and doing as much research as I could at a young age. But it wasn't until my later teen years that I actually could take on a lot more research and really, really start to push myself. Because, you know, you have all these other distractions, school and hormones and extracurricular activities, graduation, you know, you have all these things that you can do in society, everyday life. But once you get to that point where you actually are your own man, your own woman, you have your own life in control, instead of going off and, you know, having distractions, I actually stayed home and studied and wanted to learn about, you know, something bigger than, you know, what should I...
I'm losing you again.
Here. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can hear you better now, but it's still a little tinny and distant.
I am going to take my speakerphone off to see if that helps.
Okay, you sound good now, though.
I sound better?
That sounds a lot better. We've gone through
Perfect.
Two-thirds of your segment already. You're such a fascinating person to to. That a couple of your topics that I really want to hear about, we'll have to schedule you for another show. So today, after the break, we're going to talk about myths in the night sky, because that was what the segment was called, and I'm going to have you back on to talk about agorism, your articles in the Natural News, and your wonderful video, Ulfhednar, and I had questions about that as well. So I'll have you on other shows. And also, we have the Mount Olympus Intrafaith and Interfaith Councils. And we discuss things on the show. So the intrafaith is for people who hold like Olympian beliefs. And mm-hmm. the interfaith is anybody who believes in anything, just basically looking at things like what called you to your religion, how did you know your religion was right for you, if you're leading people, what qualifies you to be a leader. You know, we look at universal questions and then we examine them from different perspectives. We do that once a month. If you'd like to join in on that, I'd be happy to invite you, and then whenever you're free on the day we're doing the show, you know, you could be included in that and bring your understanding to these questions as well.
Oh, yes, I'd like that very much.
Okay, very awesome. We're going to go to break now, and we're going to listen to Becca Kelsaw's Odyssey, not because it's about the ancient Greek myth, because it isn't, but because the title is about the ancient Greek myth. So we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen.
Just in my head, imagine it's right there in plain sight. There's no way I could have known it would come as the traffic carry on. Till faded, foggy days, the half left on it. Had to fight. Ooh, and stayed alone.
International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Greetings, this is Hercules Invictus, and you're listening to Voice of Olympus on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Today's guest is author-artist Alden Morris, who is also Greek and Norse, so our spiritualities are very similar here. Welcome back, Alden.
Can you hear me,
Alden? Yes, I can hear you now. How are you?
Perfect. I'm doing good. Sounds like there's a little bit of delay on my phone, but other than that, good.
Okay, I'm glad. Myths in the Night Sky. You did a series that's on Facebook and also in with your natural news writings. And I greatly enjoyed it. They're not very long, so for those of us who don't have phenomenally long attention spans, they were perfect. They started you up in earliest antiquity and brought you to ancient Greece and then beyond ancient Greece and explained to you the myths that the constellations are based on. What inspired you to do this series?
Well, exactly what you said. I wanted to share my religious beliefs in a non-invasive way. I don't want to, you know, climb it down people's throats when I come off, you know, like Mormons at your front door, for example. So everyone is interested in their horoscope. And so I thought, well, my people in a lot of other cultures made those horoscopes, but one of the most popular horoscopes on the planet is the Greek horoscopes. Leo, yes. Virgo, Scorpio, all those. Everyone's so proud. They get tattoos of it, but they don't know their origins. So I was like, I'm going to share the origins in a way that will not annoy people, and I'm going to keep it as short as possible so it's like little tidbits of like, oh, wow, I learned about myself, and I feel motivated and inspired. And I did it on behalf of my ancestors. I was so proud that I, you know, wanted to share their stuff. So I did my research on each constellation. I'm a writer for Natural News, so they gave me a platform to have a voice for just my constellation videos, so I could create article formats for them. But if you look at my YouTube channel, you'll see the constellation series where I do all of them in one video, then one for each constellation. And I thought that was very, very powerful because you start to understand not just more about why your constellation is that, but also why you are the way you are. So I thought that was really important to share. And I'm very happy how popular it became. So that's definitely something that sits well with me.
It was very enjoyable, and in fact, we are doing a spin-off e-radio show that will be dealing with the astrological, astronomical aspects of the ancient myths, so I'd be honored to link to your videos and articles for people who want to
start learning
about that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, feel free to share all those links. I would love it.
Very awesome. I will do that by this weekend, and I'll send you a link, and this way you know where it is. We have, like, lots of stuff planned. I'm doing a series on the myths and the planets for our local library. I'm starting an astronomy club there because somebody donated a telescope. So this way, you know, make all that real with them. We've got a few online resources, too. So your articles and videos are an excellent way for them to start learning about this stuff. So thank you for making them.
Thank you. Yeah, I do have plans for more in the future. It's just a matter of getting it organized and the information presented properly. But that's what that's what branched me out to agorism and the Ulfednar work that I did with Thorfinn Odinson, which you can also find him on Facebook as well. If you'd like to have him on the show, he'd be a great guy to talk to as well.
That would be awesome. And we actually have a little bit more time, so let's get into Ulfednar. That was a very nice video. It seemed to be like a welcoming ceremony into the group. And I like how Odin was included mysteriously at various points in the video. So what was that all about? It was very powerful.
Thank you. What inspired me with that is I met Thorfinn Odinson through some of the religious groups that I'm in as part of Facebook. And he had actually reached out to me on those constellation videos, and we had talked about doing the same type of idea for Celtic constellations, because there are 50 of them, 52 of them, one for each week of the year, and they're trees. So,
awesome.
very extensive research, but I am interested in doing it. I would like to complete it, but he invited me down to his house, and we got a chance to hang out and do a bloat together, and I got to meet his group. He is the Godi of the Ulfednar group. And what I love about them is I mentioned earlier that I'm very politically opinionated and involved, and I love my Greek roots. And if you know much about Greece and our Greek ancestors, then you know the term molon labe. And
yes.
Stand here to this day. Hold on to your guns. Come and take it. And he is a, I can't say proper guy, but he does take his spiritual and ancestral beliefs and applies them to modern day living, which includes being always prepared, being always vigilant, knowing how to farm and feed yourself and survive off the land. And so he provides these classes, you know, that are free. You just come out and hang out with them, and he teaches you how to, you know, feed yourself off the land, take care of yourself off the land. So we had gone down there and done a couple bloats with them, shared as many ideas, and I suggested to him that we do a video that would help draw more people to some of the, you know, not training, but enlightenment that we're providing. And the show Vikings actually is the show that gave me the idea of popping in Odin in there.
I enjoyed that touch.
Look cheesy. Yeah, I didn't want it to look cheesy, but also I wanted people to understand that's what these ceremonies are really about. You're calling upon the strength of your ancestors and their presence, even if you don't see them.
Now, I was curious about the name. I didn't read the explanation, so I was curious about the name, because an Ulfednar means wolf's head. And there were a class of warriors like the bear shirts, you know, that would go into frenzies and fight in battles and may have inspired the werewolf legends. So I was just curious where the title came from. And Odin, of course, is famous for his wolves.
Yes, and I believe the wolf is Thorfinn's spirit animal, as where the lion is mine. And
mine too.
Yes, and I'm a Leo. So I've always known that, you know, I'm a patron of Apollo, and I'm a, you know, my spirit animal is a lion. So and I've always considered myself a child of Apollo. You know, like how Hercules is the son of Zeus. I've always just seen I'm the son of Apollo. There's a lot of personal strength that comes with that as well. But meeting Thorfinn, him being a, you know, very in touch with his gods and very in touch with his spirit animals, welcoming me with open arms into his group, regardless of the differences in my culture, that, you know, it meant a lot, especially because I don't have the groups of Greeks that are here. I just have my groups of the Norse that are here, but they set the mile marker for how things should be when more people open up to this type of spirituality. So that's something I appreciate for them, and that's something I'm going to be around for a long time to use them on.
Good, and this is a topic, too, that we'll revisit many times on the show. Before we end the segment, how can folks learn more about your work and get in contact with you?
I would say start with my YouTube channel, just Alden Morris, my first and last name, and whatever interests you, you know, watch those videos. I deliberately try to keep my videos at an entertaining length, so I try to never go over 5 minutes. I usually try to keep them between 2 and 4 minutes just for information purposes, but I would say look up your constellation, and if you like the information that I provided with you, be honest and share if it enlightened you, if it inspired you, if it, you know, motivated you, if it made your self-confidence go higher, because that's the goal, and that's what spiritually I would like to provide for the world, is how to boost everyone's independent confidence so that they would, that way they're no longer under the thumb of a primary monotheistic religion.
Thank you so very much, Alden, and I'm glad that our dialogue has started, and you are now officially an interfaith Argonaut because you'll be joining our discussion, so I'm looking forward to that as well. Joyous journeys,
cool. Thank
you. Success in all of your endeavors, and I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. I will talk to you here very soon. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Take care, Alden.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Michael and Diane Duncan, and today they're going to talk about the sixth revelation. Welcome, Michael and Diane.
Oh, thank you, Hercules and Athena. Thank you so much. And here's Michael.
Hello, Hercules. Can you hear me okay?
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great.
Athena's not joining us tonight. Or she might drop by a little later, so it's just us. Thank you for coming back on the Voice of Olympus, and I'm looking forward to learning a lot more about the sixth revelation.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now, I must say that this is an interesting journey, and that the door that's opened with the Urantu book was something I did not expect, because I have very good relationships with several cosmic spiritualities, as I like to call them. And for well over a decade, I've been building up a relationship with them and understanding the wisdom that they're offering and tying it into the ancient wisdom that I grew up with. And I must say that more has been happening with you guys than has happened in very many years in my relationship with other groups. And things have been moving very quickly, and I'm very happy about that.
Well, we are too, Hercules. Very, very happy. Very happy.
So let's start with the first five revelations so we can get to the sixth.
Okay, well, first of all, for those of you friends that don't know us yet, my wife is Diane Duncan, and I'm Michael Duncan. I'm an interfaith minister, so we're happy to be fellow interfaith Argonauts with you and your previous guests. So
yes,
we're so happy to be with you.
And I'm happy you're with
yes
us too.
Thank you.
And we've been in the Urantia Book community pretty in-depth for the last 5 years. I've been reading the Urantia book since about 1991, and Diane since about
1985.
There you go, 1985.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So, and we, you know, we have some really amazing things that are happening in our lives, and we're happy to be sharing it with you, Hercules, on the radio here, and also in our wonderful contacts we've had. Now, regarding the first five revelations, in the Urantia book, the Urantia book itself is the fifth revelation.
Yes.
And in the Urantia book, it's a revelation, you know, from God, from the forces, celestial forces, for humanity, to uplift humanity. Urantia book was given to us as the fifth revelation. In the Urantia book itself, it also mentions four previous revelations to help, you know, uplift humanity at certain points in human development, human spiritual development. Number one, the first revelation was the days of the planetary Prince Caligastia. This was about 500,000 B.C., according to the Urantia book. And the center of learning that they established, that the planetary prince Caligastia established, was Dalmatia and the Dalmatian teachings. And but the planetary prince got involved in the Lucifer Rebellion, you know, the war in heaven, so on and so forth, that we hear of in Christianity and pretty heavily in the Urantia book. So then the second revelation is the arrival of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, you know, they established the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
And this was, according to the Urantia book, about 35,914 B.C. And even though they came to a rebellion-torn world after the Lucifer Rebellion, they were still given a mandate to uplift the races with the violet blood and with their center of teaching, which was the Garden of Eden, right?
Okay.
So then on to number three. After Adam and Eve default, because they tried to uplift the races too early, they mixed with some of the tribes, some of the more primitive tribes in the Garden of Eden area. So a bestowal son comes to the earth to help rectify that, and his name was Machiaventa Melchizedek. And this was about 1980 B.C., and Machiaventa Melchizedek tries to reestablish monotheism with Abraham, and Abraham spreads this doctrine of the Most High God to Asia and to other parts of the world. So Machiaventa does his job. He prepares Abraham and Moses, and then the fourth revelation is in the Urantia book, part four of the Urantia book, and it's the life and teachings of Jesus of Nazareth.
So it's the New Testament then.
I'm sorry, say that again?
The New Testament, as most people would call it, Christianity.
Yes. Yes, absolutely, okay. Right. Okay, so Jesus of Nazareth has his seventh bestowal. He goes through seven bestowals on lower levels of manifestation. And his seventh bestowal is as a human on the earth, on Urantia, as Jesus of Nazareth. And then in 1955, you have the publication of the Urantia book, which is, like I said earlier, is the fifth revelation. So those are the five revelations leading up to what we'll be talking about as the sixth revelation.
And I've been reading up on the Urantia book. There's an online resource I've been using, and also I happened to find a book in my library talked about the teaching missions and arrival of the ancient teachers and how they've been providing various groups with new material. Did the sixth revelation arise from one such teaching mission, yours?
No, we are not in the teaching mission. We have not been involved with that. This is a experiment that was given to us by the Infinite Mother Spirit, and she gave us to Supernafem, who were to train us for this, for the coming of this, to prepare everyone for this sixth revelation.
And what is the sixth
revelation? I would say Hercules, regarding the teaching mission, it's since about the early 1980s, it's become a part of the Urantia book community and the Urantia book movement. We have not really been involved in the teaching mission, although we do have some wonderful friends that are Urantia book readers that are in the teaching mission, with whom we have contact, and we're sharing some of these new developments with.
They're very awesome and very interesting, and the direction they've been taking is phenomenally intriguing. And this is, again, an adventure I wasn't expecting, and it's made me challenge some of my preconceived notions, and that's always good. And then you no longer see something the same way. So this will be a journey we'll be sharing more in days to come. But for now, let's establish a little bit of background. The subtitle of the segment is The Return of Christ. So
yes.
How is the sixth revelation going to bring that about? And can you explain a little bit more about what the sixth revelation generally is about? I know we have another show where we'll be talking about things more specifically, but today, just to lay the groundwork.
Okay, we'll lay a little bit of groundwork, but we'll also try to push some of the preconceived notions too, I hope, because
okay.
our preconceived notions have been blown out of the water in the last couple years. So, yeah, it is for us. We're having a really wonderful journey. It's really great for us. Okay, so we have the return of Christ. Now, as I mentioned, the fourth revelation was Jesus of Nazareth, who came to Urantia on his seventh bestowal. Now, there's another aspect to Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, of course, we know is in the story divine and also human. The divine part of Jesus of Nazareth, according to the Urantia book, is the Christ, or what we call the local universe father, or the local universe creator Michael's son, and he has a female counterpart with whom he works, and that would be the local universe mother, also known as local universe mother spirit or divine minister.
Okay,
so this local universe father who's in charge of about 10 million inhabitable planets in what we call the grand universe, which is, you know, trillions and trillions of trillions of planets, inhabitable planets, well, he and she are in charge of this particular local universe that we're in of 10 million inhabitable planets. And he is the prototype or the essence of the Christ. He is Jesus in divine form. He's the pre-bestowal.
Okay.
He's the pre-bestowal and post-bestowal Jesus of Nazareth. Now, this local universe father manifests himself and has these bestowals to gain experience on the many different levels of reality of life in this local universe that they oversee. Now, I guess you could kind of say he returned or he came seven times, right? But we're saying that there is now a really special event happening, a really special time when this local universe father, having risen and ascended to the right hand of the Father after his life as Jesus, he is now returning to this earth. And this, he and the local universe mother are going to be the closest they've ever been to the earth at this time. For the last 2,000 years, it's the closest they will be to the earth in that time. So they have told us, because we meet with them, they've told us that we could consider this a return of Christ, kind of like a second coming of Christ to be with us.
Now, would this be on a physical level, a spiritual level? Would it be in one of the planes surrounding the earth or inside of us?
Well, it's interesting because... You know, we talked about the five revelations, and if we put the sixth revelation in the timeline, we could technically say that the return of Christ, or the sixth revelation, began in December of 2013. Diane met the local universe father. He came.
To the home.
and he came to her in the home, and it was real.
Yes.
Yeah. But it wasn't necessarily in a physical form.
Well, okay. He wasn't in a physical material body. I saw him when I was perfectly, fully conscious and awake. I was just simply cleaning my room. We call it the rancher room upstairs that we have given to them. We've given them many rooms now, but this was the first one, the rancher room. And he did appear to me. I was just talking to my angels, as I do every day, and then all of a sudden the right eye of my eye went dark. There was a zigzag across my forehead or brain inside, and the left eye was fully clear, and I could see a beautiful angel, what I thought was an angel, in front of me. And I asked him, I said, oh my goodness, I said, oh golly, are you the one that I've been talking to all day? And he was smiling and radiant, and he had beautiful rays that were very thick. I always thought of the rays around the angels and gods and paintings as very thin, but these were very wide, wide rays around him, and all in different colors of pearl white and blush pink white and golden white. And he had beautiful long blonde flowing hair and bright turquoise eyes. They were absolutely turquoise and bright. And he was smiling at me, dressed in a white robe up to his neck and the collar line and long sleeves, sitting in front of a table. And he said, yes. He answered me, yes. So he was fully in my vision, in my room, and I could see him perfectly clearly. And I talk about the rest of the vision, and we will be exploring that at a later time again.
Sure.
But he was actually there, and then I was taken in my, I would assume, my astral body to Wadsworth Mansion, which is in Connecticut, where I was told at a later time that the father and the mother have been having a planetary government headquarters for the last 100 years. A government agency on this earth. And so this is what happened in the beginning, and I'll let Michael go on.
I'm very interested. Initially, what interested me about your account was for a lot of people, religion is not something living. And they think that the days of encountering celestial beings and communicating with them and of experiencing miracles are long past, if they ever happened. But in point of fact, very many people on the planet are living in a reality that is very similar to what existed in ancient times, where man and the higher powers could communicate and did.
Absolutely.
And our religions and our mythologies are memories of those things. And it certainly is not dead. It's very much alive in our world. And I had told Alden, the previous guest, I've been playing hide-and-seek with my operant archetype and his female counterpart my entire life. And I've been finding them behind masks in various cultures. So when I first started to get to know both of you, I started playing hide-and-seek in what I was learning. And it took a very short period of time to see the face of the divine that I'm familiar with in these teachings as well. So that's what blew away my preconceived notions. So at this point, I'm open to new learning. So I thank you for that.
Yes, I think in some of the religions, in the Indian religion, the effulgence of Christ is so bright that people cannot see his face. And I think in that religion that their quest and their goal is for those rays to diminish so they can actually see the human form of the Father. And this is what surprised me, is that immediately I was presented with him in a perfectly clear way, and he was in a perfect clear human form. So this is something that in reading other religious texts that the goal is to actually see his face. And I was presented with that immediately. So this was a very unusual event for me.
And profound,
and her,
yes.
I saw her also, how beautiful she was, and I studied her, his counterpart, with her beautiful little oval forehead and her darling beautiful nose and her rounded cheek, the perfection of her and her stately bearing, and how slim he was. I must tell you, Hercules, he was so slim, so terribly slim, but tall. In this account, I have seen him so many times otherwise, but in this particular one, he was about 6'3", and he was so tall, but so slim, very slim. So go ahead, Michael.
And then, Hercules, you are, you know, one of the things that we have been opened up to is the urge to tell people to open themselves up to dialogue, to talk with all of this myriad of celestial beings from all different levels of existence that are helping us, that are making this whole system go, keeping our heart beating. I mean, there are so many. We read in the Urantia book and in other religious traditions all of these wonderful beings that are in charge of all this system and are helping us and working with us on a daily basis. How much more incredible our lives would be if we could tap into their guidance more, we could learn about them, find out what they want for us, you know?
And how would somebody start doing that?
I would say, for my own experience, simply talking to him. Talking to him about ordinary things, about what you're doing and what would be the best thing in your life or what you should do. That is what I have done, and that is what has brought all of this about, I believe. The other thing is that I love him so much, and when you do finally see him, you fall in love with him, and then you really want to talk to him more and be with him more. But I do want to mention that we are learning so much from every contact that we have. They have come in our home, and they have actually set up a communication system with Paradise to the Infinite Father. And we are told that there are angels working on the patio, setting up several floors going up and making this a headquarters of the world. And this is just an extraordinary thing for us. The Infinite Mother, we have been told, went to Africa during one meeting, that's where she had been, to try and open men's hearts. And we're starting to get a little feel of the workings of some of these celestials, what they actually do, which, you know, I've read the Bible all my life, and then I finally found the Urantia book, and then you really desire to know more about what the goings-on of this part of the world is, because it is a part of our world, too.
That is very true, that there are celestial beings. They're very involved in our lives, many times what is preventing them from interacting with us are our preconceived notions. And people believe that it can't happen, or that what they're hearing is their own thoughts, and all sorts of other things that just effectively block any type of communication from invisibles.
Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to add to the return of Christ idea here, if I may. Okay. As I said in December of 2013, Diane had this encounter with the local universe Father and Mother, the Christ, the essence, you know, the essence of Jesus, right? So, but then a little bit later in 2015, we encountered them again. She had been encountering them on a regular basis, but there was an encounter where they came in a meditation, and they wanted to see our home. So we welcomed them into the home, and they took a tour of the home. I mean, we're talking the local universe, father and mother now.
And
the infinite mother spirit wanted to see our home. It seemed like they approved of our home. And from then on, they started establishing a world headquarters for our planet for angels to work out of, to run the planet, to work with humans.
Archangel headquarters.
An archangel headquarters, and we're told that they're in the process of building a temple on the grounds. But this is all, you know, this is all either astral or causal level type structures.
Okay.
You know, you probably won't see it with your eyes, but this is, you know, we're told that this is what's happening. So ever since 2015, every month, we've had what are called team meetings with them. We've given them our upstairs great room. We've dedicated that to them. We have two chairs for them. We meet with them every month, and we talk to them what they want us to do, you know, telling us about them, about their lives, you know, how they want us to get their message out. So many other things we talk about. But here's the thing here. with the establishment of our home as a headquarters, as their headquarters for the world, we are told that this is what's happening is what's called a magisterial mission. It's mentioned
okay.
in the Urantia book. And particular magisterial missions, you think of a magistrate who comes to judge, there is judging, but the primary role of Christ coming again, or local universe father and mother coming again so close, is to inaugurate a stage of light and life for our planet. The first stage of a planet's light and life is called the planetary stage. And let me just give a little bit of a description about what light and life is for a sphere.
That'd be helpful,
planet.
Yes.
Okay. So what light and life means for a sphere is that a planet is stabilized in the cosmic circuits. It's like its circuits are fully plugged in to the cosmic. Everything is open, communication lines, you know, working with God, working with all the gods in a perfect way, doing the will of God for all the people on that planet and the planet itself, in line with the will of God in God's grand system. Okay? But what the father and mother have come to do is to establish with this magisterial mission the first stage, the very first stage of the process of light and life for our planet. There are seven stages, and at the seventh stage, then the planet is in its seventh stage, the planet is in light and life on the super universe level, which means it is in finite reality, finite existence. It is absolutely perfect, like a total enlightened being. So that's what they have come to do with establishing this headquarters, because it says in the Urantia book, when the first stage of light and life begins, or it's inaugurated, they build what's called a Urantia temple, which serves as the planetary headquarters for that particular planet. Now, yes, they've told us that they're building a Urantia temple.
Yes.
But they've also begun building, and some of it completed, administration.
Right.
Administrative offices or centers or what have you,
yes,
to accompany this Urantia temple. So,
and what is
for
the
us,
administrative office?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
The administration. Oh, no, no problem. The
yes.
administration is angel headquarters, seraphic headquarters. It's all of these celestial beings that work with the father and mother, their administration centers for administering the affairs of the world. We don't have all the details yet, but
okay.
But you know, it's kind of like a business or like a government that has an administrative center, but they're also building a temple.
Well, actually, they are going to build two temples, to be truthful. The first temple will be in the backyard, and that is the one when the Infinite Mother was here the very last time, and that was the 1st of January, 2017. She was in the backyard for 3 days before that, before she left. And I was told she was setting up the communication for the new temple and working on the plans for it in the backyard. Now, we have in back of our fence, in back of our backyard, a large school area, a large park. It's quite an expansive area. I was told that eventually there would be a temple made there that would be as the temple is described in the Arantia book, and that would be to the Universal Father.
And that's the
pretty awesome. That was very exciting to be happening to you.
Yes, so that is the sixth revelation in a nutshell. That
okay.
Creator Son, the local universe Father and Mother have come in the form of a god, not in the form of a man, as in the story of Jesus of Nazareth. They've come as a god close to the earth to establish the world headquarters and the Marantia Temple to begin the new era of light and life for our planet.
How will our lives differ once these temples are built and this step has been established? We know what world we live in now, and in some ways it's a wondrous place, and in other ways it's like someplace on the lower astral. So I can believe people who say we're sliding into the astral plane because it seems like we've entered it. How will this change the external reality that most people perceive?
Okay, well, from the internal comes the external, as we know from our theosophic teachings. You know, everything,
yes.
Everything comes from the inner to the outer. They, all of these angels, these archangels, these seraphim, these Melchizedeks, we're told maybe Adam and Eve might come, not sure, but all of these beings are working on an inner level. They're close to the earth. They're working on an inner level with human beings throughout the planet. They say they're working especially, their focus is especially on the United States and some other countries, but focus mostly on the United States. The United States being the kind of the vehicle for this change, but they're working with the people of the United States and the world on an inner level to open their hearts to, number one, cultivate world peace, to work on people opening their hearts to be more compassionate, more kind, and more loving. They're working on people's hearts to put out a message for people in the world to love them more, to open their hearts to them more, connect with them more, dialogue with them more, and establish a deeper relationship with them. And so with the world, with the idea of world peace on an outer level, and them working on men's hearts and people's hearts on an inner level, there should probably be, I would think, some transformation taking place in the world.
I think we're all praying for that, and you guys have a regularly scheduled prayer for peace. How can folks get involved with that?
Oh, yes. Our next World Peace Prayer is actually this coming Friday. Within our Urantia community, our Urantia book community, it was last July, the father, as a matter of fact, in a team meeting with the father and mother, the father urged us to begin a World Peace Prayer with our Urantia book community. We established that in July, and we have about 150 to 200 people in our Urantia community that we, you know, we send the announcement to for the monthly World Peace Prayer. Our next one is going to be on Friday, February 10th at 8 p.m.
And the Father and Mother, the Father and Mother will be here. They will be here at that time, and we will be having a meeting with them so that if people pray at that time, it will almost be that they can key into actually maybe with hope and prayer some of the presence of the Father and Mother with us, knowing that we are having them here and talking to them and having their real presence right here in the home. And I do want to make a mention that when I went to Wadsworth Mansion, that was the headquarters for the past 100 years. So they are transferring their headquarters to the west. Now, I don't know on what purpose or what reason that is, but they have gone from the East Coast to the West Coast here, where we are, and this is the new headquarters of the world. So they are operating now to make that fully operative, and we'll see what results come of it.
I know that in some of the other theosophical and cosmic systems that I've studied, there is a retreat, so-called, for Hercules and Athena, who are considered Elohim, or creator of gods. And they say it's out west somewhere on the side of a mountain. But I found that in my meditations, I can go there by closing my eyes.
Of course.
It's always, wherever it happens to be on the planet, it's just close your eyes and
relax. Well, I know there has been talk of Mount Shasta has always been a retreat area,
yes.
But I'm not sure if there is another one that they're talking about here in the west in our area.
But that's all very exciting, and it's alive, and it's happening now, and it's an opportunity
yes.
for people to get involved with matters of cosmic
yes.
Import. So it's all very, very exciting. And I must say, when I tried dialoguing, as you're suggesting, I got an answer back right away. Unlike with a lot of systems, you have to devote a lot of time and energy, and a lot of time and energy, to get to the point where you're communicating with something. Here, there was almost an immediate answer, and I was, of course, told things in a way that I could listen to them, which is through the ancient systems of understanding. So much of me is tied into that, of course, that's the way the universe is going to communicate with me. But it was very interesting because what I was told, you repeated very shortly after it was told to me, and then a bunch of synchronicities happened that repeated the same message and happened to you as well. So it drew attention to the fact that, yes, this was indeed it wasn't just a coincidence. It was a coincidence with meaning. It was a bona fide synchronicity.
Yes, and I do want to make very clear that I am not talking to them only once a month. We do have impromptu meetings with the Father, the Mother, and sometimes the Infinite Mother Spirit, and they do let me know. I know sometimes I will be outside sitting on the bench, and all of a sudden someone will come and tell me, she's coming now, and she wants to talk to you upstairs right now. And I grab my pencil and paper, and I go upstairs, and I'm ready, you know. So this is not just once a month either. And, of course, all day long I'm talking to my angels and getting information in addition. But I just wanted to make sure that you understood there are impromptu meetings that do occur, and sometimes Michael and I are both called together to have that meeting.
Awesome. I had a question that just occurred to me. I know that in the Urantia book way of looking at things, the sixth revelation is here now. The fifth revelation came with the Urantia book, and the fourth with Christianity. Are remnants of the first three revelations still existing on our planet?
Well, yes, of course, of course. You know, there's always, you know, there's always a lasting influence with these, you know, with the revelations, because these revelations come at a time, at a specific time, when humanity is at a the appropriate level spiritually or consciously to be able to accept these teachings, and you know, it becomes ingrained in the human experience and carries all the way through. I mean, all of the work that Adam and Eve did, you know, they according to the Urantia book, they spread their progeny out, you know, to all the world and the second garden and such, and of course Melchizedek working with Abraham and Moses, and you know, that carries, I think that naturally carries on. And our work with the Urantia book, I mean, this sixth revelation really for us is in the context of the teachings of the Urantia book. They talk about, the Urantia book talks about, or presents a really clear, for us, and the West, I think, presents a very clear example of our journey of ascension through the different, you know, cosmic levels till we reach, you know, the Father in Paradise. It shows a really clear pathway. It talks about a number of celestial beings on a number of levels that help us. And it gives us a really good basic indication of the local universe Father and the local universe Mother, what their realm is, whom they affect, you know, who they are as our first kind of gods, as our first destination, our, you know, of perfection.
Yes, I want to mention, too, that when I did go to Wadsworth Mansion, there were 40 beings that were surrounding the Father and Mother, whom I saw perfectly clearly, but the 40 beings I saw only very hazily. Now, I was told later that 10 of those were Melchizedek's. Now, what is interesting is when they all arrived here for the celebration of This is a World Government Head during the Christmas time, when the Father and Mother came on December 22nd till the 26th, also 10 Melchizedek's came with them. And I have found now that there are sometimes Melchizedek's working in the Great Room. Like, I'll be writing a talk, like I was writing an article on truth. And there was a Melchizedek working in the desk in the Great Room, and I was told that he was trying to help me as I was writing my article. So we are also learning about Melchizedek's beside just the workings of the Father and the Mother.
Yeah, there are many types and levels of beings, and part of the problem in understanding them is, again, the curse of tongues or the Tower of Babel story, in that we speak different languages, we have different concepts, and the concepts blind us or force us to see something a certain way, and it's like the blind man and the elephant. Everybody's touching something and describing something different, and they're arguing about it.
I love that, Hercules.
Thank you.
Yes.
So part of this process with the interfaith is to try to see past the terminology and to see past the theological context into what people are actually listen to what people are actually saying and experiencing. And you might find that it's not as alien to you as you think. You know, it's something that's very well known to you and that you're very familiar with. It's just being described in different terms.
Yes, absolutely.
Now,
I just wanted to make one more point that I actually felt the curls of his golden hair on my shoulder during part of the encounter. And, you know, he felt completely real to me, even though I knew he was in a different body, and I was too at that time. But I did feel him, and I did want to make that clear. I actually felt his curls on my shoulder.
That is
so
awesome.
So you do feel him.
Yes, they're very real. They're very,
yes,
very real.
Yes, it's a real body. Uh-huh. Yes. It's different, but it's real. Yes.
And you're going to be, over the next year, releasing more and more information about the Sixth Revelation. I'm looking forward to being part of its unfolding. And you've certainly given me lots to think about and meditate on, and I thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, Hercules. Thank
well,
you.
Well, you know, the synchronicities go both ways, Hercules.
Oh, yes.
Because, as you know from some of our talks, we're very, very interested. Dan loves ancient history, and we are so interested in the Greek influence. There are so many people that say, you know, we are still in a Greek line of thought, even to this day, you know. And of course, Christianity has so many roots in the Greek, and we really love to study the Minoans and what happened in Crete in, you know, the early times. So you've opened us up to
re-looking at it.
Well, I'm glad.
We've studied it in the past, but we thank you for opening this up to us and noticing the similarities. And it has just been startling to us.
Yeah, and our interfaith, it just speaks interfaith volumes to us, because, as you know, there are so many parallels. I mean, the essence of the gods, the wisdom teaching, the wisdom religion, is all there throughout the ages, in different, as you said, you know, different names. But the gods are there. The angels are there, the celestial helpers are all there, whatever names they are. We can all experience them, no matter what language we speak, no matter what religious philosophy we adhere to.
And I found that to be very true as well. I will, if you send me a copy of the prayer invitation, I will share it on Facebook and I will share it on my website. And this way more people can find out about it and join it. And
thank you.
8 p.m. Pacific time, right?
Yes, it's Friday, February 10th. That's this coming Friday. Yes, 8 p.m. Pacific. And we also wanted to mention, if anyone wanted to, be updated on the times, they could certainly, you know, they could contact me personally with my email is michaelduncan1@hotmail.com. It's michaelduncan, the number 1@hotmail.com. And they can, you know, they can email me and we can send them out the announcement times. But we also appreciate you posting that on your Facebook and letting us announce it on your radio program once in a while. Appreciate that.
Thank you for joining to make the Father's message get out to as many people as possible. And we praise you and Athena for this.
Thank you. Praise isn't necessary, but I thank you for your kind words. And it's a pleasure to be a part of this. I'm enjoying getting to know both of you, and this has been a very interesting journey, and it promises to become even more interesting in the days ahead, so I'm very grateful for that as well. And I must say that the more ancient perspectives, too, the original Theosophia, the original theosophy of the Hellenistic age, a lot of what is being shared with us now was shared back then as well.
Yes,
if you know where to look for it, you could find it, not commonly known. And I always told people that I like theosophy because theosophy, even if you burn all the books and as have been done many times and it goes underground, there are various states of mind where you could retrieve it. You know, if you go inward, there are places where this wisdom keeps coming through, and even though it comes through the filter of people and sometimes it gets a little distorted, if you make it your study, you'll see that this information is continuously being given to humanity.
Of
continuously.
Course. Yeah,
it never stops.
Yes, we were studying under Grace Kanoki, who was the head of the American section of Theosophy, and Alta Dana, and we would have the most wonderful lunches with her and Kirby and all of the wonderful people that were involved with the making the Theosophical Society how the most marvelous place that they did. And my whole family would go up. Grace became very friendly with my mother and father and our children, and we had really wonderful times before she passed away.
I wish I could have been there. I've heard
yeah.
I've never met them.
These were kind of the second generation theosophists. There was Blavatsky, and there was Colonel Olcott, and there was the. They were kind of the first generation.
Judge and Synod and so forth.
But
yeah, and then this Grace Kanocki and Kirby Van Matter and John Van Matter, kind of a second generation.
Oh, they're, wonderful people!
They're all deceased now, but we, you know, we had contact with them, and it was a wonderful time for us. Wonderful years of growth. And we went through the Rosicrucian teachings. We still read quite a bit of their home study materials. But now we're really involved in the Urantia book, and we see so much of the Hellenistic influence in the Urantia book. We see the Hindu, we see Kabbalah, we see all kinds of things that that are in the Urantia book that are presented in kind of a Christian Western type format, you know.
And that's understandable because it was addressed to that type of audience. It's like when the universe in its many guises communicates with me, it communicates with me in a way that I will accept and understand. This material was being put out to a predominantly Western Christian audience. So it makes a lot of sense that it would be communicated in this way.
Yeah,
of course.
So I want to thank you both for being on tonight. You'll be on again soon. And I another segment opened up mysteriously, so I will schedule you for that. And thank you so much for being on the show and for being part of our Interfaith Argonaut Adventure.
We are so delighted. And please give our love to Athena.
Yes, definitely.
We most certainly
and thank
will.
You again for all you have done and to get the Father's message out. That's what our important message is for today.
Thank you, and you're very welcome. It's my honor and my pleasure.
All right. You take care,
you.
Hercules.
Okay, take care.
Thank
right.
you.
All
good
right.
night. Well, that was a wonderful show today, and we had different views that were divergent but kind of started gelling toward a greater understanding and looking behind the culture and looking behind the terminology and looking behind the belief systems. I'm very excited about that development, and it is an awesome thing. It's a phenomenal adventure, and I invite those of you who are listening to join us. We have very many ways on our site for getting involved. If you'd like to know what's going on with us, go to my website, which is HerculesInvictus.net. And if you go there and you click on the Golden Fleece, it'll bring you to a calendar of all our activities. Today, the registration opened for our UFO Entity Enigma and Mythic Adventures Voyage of the Argo RPG at the Paramus Community School. And also, we have coming up at the Amber Dragon, The Mask of Zeus, Jupiter and the Golden Fleece this Saturday. So those are two portals through which you can enter physically. Thank you very, very much for joining us tonight. I wish you all joyous journeys and awesome adventures. This is Hercules Invictus signing off.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.